Chapter 1. The Last Second. Mara Vale had one hand on Daniel Keane's sternum when his wedding ring caught the ambulance light. It flashed once, a hard little band of gold against the blue of his fingers, and for half a second she thought of all the useless things people carried into the back of a rig. Rings, phones, receipts. A folded napkin from a restaurant still tucked in a suit pocket. Proof that they had been somewhere else before the body became a problem to solve. Dan, she said, because his chart said Daniel, but his eyes kept trying to answer to something smaller. Stay with me. The monitor gave her three ugly beats and then a pause, long enough to make the driver's voice sharpen from the front. How bad? Drive, Mara said. She did not have room for reassurance. She had oxygen, pads, an IV line that did not want to thread, and a man whose heart had chosen the worst possible moment to become symbolic. Dan's left hand twitched near the strap. The ring flashed again. Elena, he said, you can tell me about Elena when your heart stops trying to quit. His mouth moved like he almost smiled. The ambulance hit a seam in the road. The ceiling light swung. Red-orange swept across the cabinets, across the saline bag, across the side of Dan's face. It made the sweat at his temple look briefly like sunset. Then the driver went quiet. Not normal quiet. Not concentration. Not listening to dispatch. Gone. Mara looked up. The driver's shoulder came apart first, loosening into ash against the seatbelt. The wheel turned under hands that were not there anymore. No, Mara said. The rig drifted left. Outside, headlights widened. Mara knew the next second before it arrived. She knew the angle. She knew the median was too close, and the oncoming truck had nowhere to go. She knew Dan's heart was still bad, but not hopeless. She knew she could have kept him alive. The monitor screamed. Dan's hand closed around nothing. The windshield filled with light. Something cold and patient seemed to lean into the ambulance, close enough to touch the back of Mara's neck. She reached for Dan. Her fingers broke into dust before they found him. Saha Ven had not chosen the name Ven. That was the first lie carved into the tablet beside the execution field. The second was that the field was a place of judgment. It had been built to look ancient. Black stone, white banners, the hollow metal chime that meant a witness had entered the circle. The officials liked old forms when they performed new crimes. They liked making theft look like custom. They liked making silence look like peace. Saar stood with her wrists bound in front of the tablet and watched the recording drone settle into place. The drone's lens opened. The speaker began the sentence, not Saar's sentence. That had been decided before the hearing, before the witnesses, before the families from the extraction site were told their dead had been lost to instability. This was the state sentence, the public sentence, the one that would outlive the body. This person, recorded under provisional designation Saar Ven, is found guilty of civic fracture, false mourning, and incitement by grief. False mourning. That one almost made Saar laugh. Behind the officials, beyond the hazard glass, the families stood in rows. Some had covered their name marks, some had scratched them raw. One old woman stared directly at Saar with both hands pressed to her throat, as if holding a word inside by force. Saar looked at her and did not recant. She had been asked to say the collapse was natural. She had been asked to say the workers were honored. She had been asked to say the missing names had returned cleanly to the memory of the people. She had refused. The executioner raised the weapon. The unfinished name in Saar's chest rose with it. Not Ven, not yet, not hers. The chime sounded again, though no new witness entered the field. Saar felt the air change. It was not fear. Fear had been there all morning, sour and familiar. This was older than fear. It stood behind the raised weapon and behind the recording drone and behind every official mouth waiting to rename them after death. The speaker took breath for the final word, the weapon charged. Saar lifted her head, not to the officials and not to the families behind the glass. To the witness, no one else had heard arrive. Remember it correctly, Saar said. Her body loosened into ash before the state could answer. Nia Reyes was losing an argument she had not meant to start. I'm just saying, Tessa said, which meant she had been saying it for 9 minutes and had at least three more stored somewhere behind her teeth. You cannot complain about being exhausted and then volunteer for every extra shift like suffering is a personality. The crosswalk counted down from 8. Nia adjusted the tote slipping off her shoulder. I did not volunteer, I was cornered. By a spreadsheet. By Priya with a spreadsheet. Different predator. Tessa laughed despite herself, and Nia looked over because that had been the point. Not winning. Not even being right. Just getting Tessa to stop sounding like every word had to pass through a locked door first. They had been almost friends once, then too close to co-workers to be only friends. Then not careful enough. Then careful in a way that bruised. The light changed overhead. White walking figure, wet street. Evening traffic dragging itself through the intersection with the dull impatience of people trying to get home. You could say no, Tessa said. You first. I say no constantly. You say no like you are auditioning for yes. Tessa's mouth opened. The countdown clicked from 5 to 4. A horn cut through the intersection. Nia turned toward it. There was a car where no car should have been, angled wrong, too fast, its front end dipping as the driver fought the brakes. A delivery van beside it swerved. Tires screamed. Someone on the sidewalk shouted. Nia did not understand it as danger at first. The brain was stupid that way. It gave her pieces, headlights, rain on asphalt. Tessa's sleeve brushing her wrist, the plastic handle of the tote biting into her palm. Then Tessa said her name, not loud, just Nia. Nia started to say, what? The word never reached her mouth. Ovek knew the roof was speaking before the adults did. It clicked above them in small, sharp sounds like teeth. The old ones in the line kept their eyes down. That was what everyone did under the bright hazard lamps. Eyes down, hands visible. Breath quiet. If the overseers saw fear, they called it refusal. If they saw refusal, they wrote a number on your tag and sent you deeper. Ovek had been sent deeper twice. They hated the second shaft because the air tasted like metal and old water. They hated the straps on the carts. They hated how the warning bells had different meanings, but nobody told the children which was which. This bell was new, low, broken, coming from everywhere. Someone ahead whispered a name. Then another, not roll call, not prayer. The names moved through the line too quickly for that. Remember me, tell them. My child is not listed. Ovek did not know who had spoken. The words seemed to come from the stone itself. Keep moving, an overseer shouted. The roof clicked again. Dust sifted down in a soft grey veil. It landed on Ovek's eyelashes, in their mouth, on the back of their tongue. They coughed and tasted the mountain. A support beam screamed. The adults understood then. The line broke. Bodies pressed from behind. Someone fell. Someone small, smaller than Ovek, started crying in a language the overseers had forbidden because it made the worksite sound like a village instead of a contract. Ovek tried to breathe. The air was gone. The lamp strobed orange. Stone came down somewhere close enough to make the ground jump. Ovek's ribs hit the cart rail. Pain bloomed white and immediate. The names became a crowd. Ovek tried to answer, but their mouth was full of dust. In the dark between one alarm pulse and the next, something vast and gentle turned its face toward the shaft. The beam above them split. Ovek became ash before the mountain could close its hand. Dr. Asher Menon saw the failure cascade 6 seconds before anyone else in the room. Not because she was smarter, because she was looking in the right place. The overhead rig had been complaining all afternoon. A soft vibration in the surgical light, a tremor in the ceiling mount whenever the building shook from another impact somewhere beyond the hospital district. Maintenance had promised a team. Security had promised the upper floors were clear. The city had promised, repeatedly and without evidence, that the worst was over. The patient on the table had a penetrating abdominal injury, pressure dropping, pupils reactive, still possible. Possible mattered. Asher believed in possible the way other people believed in saints. Clamp, she said. The intern put it into her hand. The lights flickered. No one looked up. Asher did. The ceiling seam had opened over the east side of the theater, thin as a drawn line. Plaster dust trembled along it. The mounted surgical light shifted 3 centimeters lower, then held. The patient could survive the bleeding. The patient could survive the power loss. The patient could even survive the first impact if they got the table unlocked and moved now. Back from the table, Asher said. Her resident glanced up. What? Move. The word came out too calm. That was the problem with certainty. It did not always sound like panic, even when panic would have been more useful. Another impact rolled through the building. The ceiling answered. The mount tore loose with a sound like bone leaving socket. Asha saw the angle, the weight, the line of descent. She saw her own hand still inside the patient's blood. She saw the resident too close. She saw the intern frozen. She saw, with absolute and useless precision, who could still be saved if she moved left instead of back. So she moved left. The resident stumbled clear. The surgical light dropped. For one instant, the room became strangely quiet, not silent. Quiet, as if some final authority had entered and everyone had stepped aside to let it work. Asha looked at the falling metal and made the diagnosis before it reached her. Unsurvivable. Her hand turned to dust inside the patient's wound. Death reached for them. The universe was faster.